Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Frampton is piling the pressure on here. Dunair whips in a right hand. Frampton sees it coming, but takes a couple as Frampton sets up his own right hand. And Frampton now opens up with 3-4 punches.
I think Carl Frampton is sending a message out to every featherweight in the world right now. He's boxing. He's shown every aspect of his game. He's fighting inside, outside. He's counter-punching. He's slipping. He's judging the distance masterfully. He's slipping these punches from Dunair by an inch, and he's countering effectively.
20 seconds to go in round number 12. Frampton holding his ground in the centre of the ring, but covering up on the inside. Tries a left hook, then an overhand right, and they rise at ringside to this final blistering salvo from Frampton. Left hook to the body, right uppercut, right hand over the top, and the bell's down. At the end of a brilliant performance by Carl Frampton.
There we are, that's Carl Frampton in, really, really good form against Nonito Dunair on Saturday in Belfast. Won 9 of the 12 rounds in the end. And as you would have heard there, Andy Lee was on co-commentary with Mike Costello. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Joe.
I was I wasn't watching the fight, and but I thought to myself, I was relaxing on the couch, and I thought, you know what? I haven't had Mike Costello in my life in too long. So I said, I'll stick on the fight. Yeah. And then the Limerick brogue is the first thing I hear. I know what's going on here. He's hit the big time.
I know. I was in awe of Mike Costello at the end of it because, like, I wasn't aware, I hadn't listened to many fights on BBC Five Live, but how they work, or how they work there, is that he does from bell to bell, he's non-stop. He's describing what's going on and all the action, calling it. And in between and around, whoever it is, me this time, goes in and gives their analysis, you know, from like the expert point of view. And but like literally from the bell start, and he's non-stop, there's not one dead moment silence, you know, and he's just going and he's describing what's happening so eloquently and so, you know, fluidly. I'm trying to focus on the fight. I was just saying, oh, what's going on beside me. It was amazing to see. And
he's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
And guys, the voice is brilliant as well. Yeah. Like, he's just been gifted a great voice, and then the vocabulary and the knowledge. And
yeah.
I do listen to him. We're talking, Mike Costello is the commentator, for those of you who haven't heard him on Five Live. I'm sure most of you have at this stage, one way or another. I do listen to him afterwards and think, I shouldn't be in this business if that's the standard. My God, he is just great. Yeah. It was really good though. I mean, you seem to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, nice, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was nice. And he gave me the space to, you know, in that minute to say what I wanted. And if I saw something, you know, in the round, like I pointed out before, that Dunair had a swelling going into the fight while he was doing it, you know, I just pointed it, you know, to my eye, to Dunair's eye and my eye, and I said, there's a swelling there. And he mentioned it, you know, before the fight even started. So I don't know whether he picked that up, but it did affect him during the fight. It started to really well up during the fight and became quite red. And eventually he was cut a couple of times. Mm. But it was a great contest and a great fight. And both men did themselves a credit, you know, the way they fought and carried themselves before and after the fight.
Right. Mm. Well, actually, you mentioned after the fight as well and before. I mean, it was nice for boxing to have a bit of class around the whole thing. And funny, you mentioned enjoying the fight, because Mike Costello, who was your commentator, went into the dressing room afterwards to interview Frampton, which we're going to hear now. And as you'll hear, Dunair comes into the changing room and they have a really nice exchange. And actually, Costello starts by putting it to Frampton that Andy Lee, who was alongside him for the fight, really enjoyed the fight, thought it was a bit of a masterclass from Frampton in many respects. Here was Frampton's answer.
Do you know what? I'm not just saying this. There was a time in the fight I seen Andy Lee commentating and I was thinking, it came into my head, Andy Lee's going to be loving this, because that's the way he boxes, and he was a brilliant boxer, and I knew that he's someone that would appreciate the way I was boxing. And I was thinking that's funny you said that, but I'm glad that Andy approves.
And so Windsor Park now, it's been talked for so long and it's very soon to be a reality.
Yeah, I'm just glad it's happening now. I was kind of getting worried that it was never going to happen, you know, and it would have been a very disappointing thing for me, but it happened, it's happening, and I can't wait. There he is, the man, Nonito.
You're the man.
How are you doing, mate?
Thank you,
mate. You're amazing, a great man.
Thank you, mate. Like I said, friends forever, man.
Yes, whatever. Good man. Well, next time I'm in Vegas, I'm coming to see you.
You let me know.
Yes,
whatever I can do in any way.
Thank you.
You know, I'm going to come down and wait, because you guys are big.
You could do it as well. I know you could do it.
Whatever I need, whatever you need that I can help with.
Likewise, Nonito.
You know,
good man.
And Belfast has been amazing to me.
Yeah.
You've been amazing to me.
When do you go home?
Wednesday.
Oh, you're here? All right.
Yeah, I'm just going to look around, you know. Yeah. But hey, amazing fight. I had so much fun with the fight. I just got to say, you did well. You were smart, you know. It was. I had so much fun in it.
No,
you know?
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
The crowd loved it, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate
all right,
it.
Brother.
You're a good man. Thank you.
Love you, man. You're awesome.
Thank you.
All the best.
Cheers, boys.
I'm cheering for you.
Good man.
Yeah.
And Carl, that just shows what an advert for boxing this has been.
I've never had an opponent come in and be as nice as that and be as humble. And he's a great guy. Great people around him. Great family. Credit to himself and his people. He's a good man. I said in the ring after, you know, people get a bit emotional and stuff, and I says, you know, we're going to be friends. We're friends forever. And you have this respect. You share a ring with a man and. Yeah, he's a good man.
Now, isn't that lovely on every level?
I know, you wouldn't believe these two guys are just trying to punch their heads off, just trying to knock each other out, you know, 30 minutes previous to that conversation. But and I've seen since that there's been photographs of them having a meal together and stuff, spending time with their wives together and friends and family. So it's genuine, you know, and there was a huge respect. And you could not respect, I'm sure as fighters they could not respect each other because of what they've achieved previous to this fight.
Yeah, Dener's a four-weight world champion. He's 35 now, so he maybe doesn't have the engine he had, but he's a serious operator.
And he's potentially like a Hall of Famer. You know, he will be, I'm sure when he retires, he'll be considered for the Hall of Fame. Sensational fight, and still had a lot left. You know, he wasn't a completely empty vessel on Saturday night. He had a lot, he held some back in the tank, and in the 11th round, he rocked Carl with, you know, a couple of left hooks, and Carl was never in trouble getting stopped or that, but they definitely registered and they heard him, but he came right back and finished the fight out in the 12th round strongly, you know.
Because he said, Dunair, later on, that Frampton surprised me. His chin was very surprising. I mean, I hit him, and a lot of guys would have gone down and have gone down, and he stood there. Just the way he fought was very surprising to me. So that he was impressed with Frampton's chin.
I watched the fight, and okay, Dunair was 35 years old in 42 fights, and this was his 43rd fight. So, and there was a lot of miles on the clock, and for it's certain that his best years are behind him. And so he used his experience and his craft, and he couldn't box as he used to box, like in the past, where he was agile on his feet and had that, you know, those quick reflexes and lightning fast hands. But he used his smarts and experience to get him through the fights. He knew he couldn't compete with Carl in terms of strength and speed, but he used all the tricks that he knew, and he picked these moments when he fought Carl's concentration lapse. There were times when it was getting a little bit too easy for Carl Frampton, and his concentration would lapse, and then Dunair would pounce on him. And in those moments, Dunair was very dangerous.
So he sensed when Frampton dropped his guard.
It was great to see it was a pleasure to watch a great fighter like that, and past his best, but to use his skills and use his smarts to make it a competitive fight and to always be a danger. You know, it was a pleasure to behold.
So it was kind of a fighter's fight to watch. And
it really was. And and Frampton, he's a master at judging the distance. You know, he was at times within an inch of just missing a punch that could potentially knock him out. Multiple times during the fight, he was just slipping and moving and just always at a distance and always in position to strike back and counter. And he mixed it up. He showed a full array of what he can do. He can be aggressive, and at times he was aggressive. And I thought at one stage when it was around 4, 5 and 6, I said, if Carl continues to fight like this and be aggressive like that, he'll find a stoppage. Because there were times when Dunair was having a bit of an emotional journey in the fight where he looked demoralized at times and dejected and probably was coming to realization that I am past my best. I am an old fighter. And he's probably having doubts. And if Carl would have stepped on the gas at that stage, he might have forced a stoppage. But as I said, Dunair was always dangerous. And maybe Carl sensed that. Maybe for me sitting on the outside, it was easy for me to say that. But maybe when he was just dodging those punches that were just whistling by his face, he could still feel the power that was in the punches. So he knew to be safe. And he boxed a very smart fight and a very, very good fight.
It strikes me, judging the distance, especially when you're talking about those millimetres or inches and at that speed against the quality of fighter that Dunair clearly still is in many respects. That must be one of the most difficult parts of the sweet science to master, and maybe some guys never quite master it.
No, I don't. Some guys, and it's instinctive, I think, you know.
I'm not sure how you would teach it.
Yeah, well, Frampton seems to always have it, you know, and we go back to the amateur days with Zor Antia. Zor was the first one to really work with me on distance. And I know he worked with Carl a lot on judging distance. And most pad work is done in the one spot or when you move around. But with Zor, you move back and forward. And in the same way you move in a boxing fight, but you're always staying in distance. And if you ever step too close in the distance, it's all slap you with the pad, you hear whack you.
So it's just your eye gets in after
a
while?
Yeah, you get a sixth sense for it, for the just feeling when you're at range. And like, what makes it even more credible, Danae had like a 5-inch reach advantage on Carl Frampton, and he had a height advantage, and that makes it even more remarkable that he could always just stay a little bit out of distance, but not too far to where he couldn't strike back. It was a great performance, and like, considering where he was a year ago, Carl Frampton, you know, after losing to Santa Cruz, fight, then went on to have fight cancelled, having the split with the McGuigans, which is ongoing, and there will be a lawsuit that will drag on. And I believe he's still adjusting.
Do you? Jamie Moore is obviously the new coach. So what you saw on Saturday was just his second fight under Moore. Are you starting to see the difference?
A little bit. I saw, I was watching some of the camp and watching them on the pads. And even before the fight in the dressing room, he was throwing like a lazy 1-2 and then snapping back with a hook. And I could see him doing it in the fight, you know. So you can see things are starting to take root there. And Carl talked about changing the camp and how he used to spar so many rounds, and that they've cut that out now. And that he said that this is the most enjoyable and the best time he's had in the camp. And you know, if someone's happy doing what they're doing, it makes it twice as it makes it easier going into the gym every day. If you've got a smile on your face, and there was videos of them doing karaoke, and you know, and they're in Tenerife, and they're in good weather, so. It seems like there's a positive feeling in the camp, and the camp actually, Tommy Coyle, who's also trained by Jamie Moore, fought the same night on the Khan on the card and had a good win. So there was definitely a good feeling in the camp.
Because Adam Booth actually tweeted, obviously, trained you, and he said, it's the best I've seen Frampton. Big kudos to Jamie Moore. So like, is it realistic that Frampton will be a noticeably different fighter, even to people not as au fait with the minutiae as you? Like, will a casual sports fan be able to watch Frampton from 18 months ago, maybe in another 18 months' time, and see a totally different fighter, or does it quite work?
I'm not sure with Frampton, because he was a world champion under Shane McGuigan, so he had a lot of the aspects that he needs already, in terms of he was aggressive when he needed to be, and he counterpunched. I thought he was more aggressive Saturday night than I'd seen him before. Right. To me, Carl Frampton was at his best when he was a counterpuncher, and he'd always looked a counterpunch. On Saturday night, he forced the issue at times, and that was not good for me to see. You know, I thought that this was unlike him, and it was good to see that aspect of his game.
So it's an extra option in the playbook.
Yeah, and it was something he'll have to do, because that's what happened. Like in the Santa Cruz second fight, Santa Cruz came at him and was the aggressive, and it suited Carl. He could box and move. In the second fight, Santa Cruz totally changed his tactics and stepped off him, and then there didn't seem to be a plan B.
Okay.
But now it seems like they're addressing that and very working on it.
So,
I think in 18 months you will see a slight difference.
But he may still counterpunch in a certain fight where that's the right thing to do.
That will always be his plan A, I think, and where his strength is.
So Windsor Park in the summer is certainly being talked about. The landscape, speaking very vaguely, is that Oscar Valdez is the WBO title holder and Frampton is now the mandatory challenger. Valdez has a broken jaw, and there's also talk he may be moving up a weight, so maybe that opens up the WBO title for Frampton. And then there's Lee Selby against Josh Warrington next month, and the winner, it seems, may well also end up in Windsor Park in the summer. And it seems if the Leo Santa Cruz trilogy is going to happen, it will be next year. So looking at that landscape, what do you think is the perfect route for Frampton, all going well?
I think he would most likely like the Santa Cruz fight, but as you said, Leo Santa Cruz fighting Abnamaras again, I think. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
So that would be pushed back maybe to 2019. I think the one that would be easiest to make would be, even though he's mandatory to Oscar Valdez, I think going with the Lee Selby fight, if Selby beats Warrington, I would favour Selby to beat him, but there could always be an upset there. You know, Warrington's a good fighter.
And if Warrington somehow snuck a win against Selby, would you fight? Would Warrington and Windsor Park be the natural fight?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, I think the winner of that fight, because they're both on the same promotion with Frank Warren, it's a natural fight to make, and it's still in the domestic scene, so it would be a big, you know, big local rivalry.
Yeah, Windsor Park, he'll be huge.
Whereas not many people would be aware of Oscar Valdez, you know, fighting mainly in California. Although he's a bigger name in world boxing, I think Frampton Selby is a huge fight.
Yeah.
And a really, really good fight, yeah.
And so it seems like a nice route as well. great fight against Selby, all going well, Windsor Park, and then it shapes up for Santa Cruz the following year. And again, it's more time with Jamie Moore. It's perfecting all the things they're working on.
The fight with Selby would not be no walk in the park, just because of the style. Selby's a very tricky, tricky boxer. Has a lot of, he models himself on Floyd Mayweather, and he has a lot of that style about him. I'm not sure, he's definitely no for Mayweather. And Frampton, you could argue that Frampton's done a lot more in the game than he has. But he's an unknown quantity in certain aspects, Selby, and he'd be a dangerous fight, I think, for Carl Frampton, but not definitely one that Frampton's capable of winning.
Okay. You know? So, in short, Carl Frampton feeling very good about life right now.
And it's a lesson to anybody that when you're going through hard times, I think if I watch him, you know, at this time last year, he's probably at his lowest ebb, you know. Just to persevere and keep working towards his goals, and now he's on top of the world again.
The fight I did see over the weekend, probably got shortchanged having listened to you and Mike Costello enjoying the Frampton fight, was Amir Khan after his 2-year layoff. So Phil LaGreco, he knocked him down after 13 seconds. LaGreco got back up, and then the fight was over in 40 seconds. I was a little nervous at Khan, but I'm back with a bang. I want to become world champion this year or next year. Kell Brook was ringside and living off his name, said Amir Khan. So he's looking around the welterweight division. Was this always going to be a complete mismatch for Khan?
Yeah, it was, but it was actually the fact that Khan got him out of there so early and so quick was probably the best thing he could have done, because LaGreco was so poor. Had it gone four rounds, he would have made Khan look bad, you know, because he was such a poor opponent. I think it was the best thing Khan could do. It actually made it more, was more remarkable and made it more sensational, the fact that he blasted him out so quickly, and made more, probably the
bit
best
statement.
Yeah, the best statement he could ever make.
Yeah. He's been out of the ring 2 years.
Even though people may say, oh, it can happen, a flash knockdown, and, you know, the guy never recovered, but maybe that ebb from him having that nervous energy that he talked about, that he just went out and threw something so quickly that it flashed the guy, and he never came back, LaGreco. So, yeah, it was a good win. Nothing to shout about, but a good win after 2 years layoff.
Yeah, his last fight was against Alvarez in 2016. How good is Amir Khan?
Amir Khan is an... Like, when you win an Olympic silver medal at 17 years old, like, that's unheard of.
And I remember the hype at the time, and of his punches, Amir, this guy was going to be a world champion.
Sensational boxer, lightning speed, and that's his greatest strength, but it's also probably his downfall at most times, like, because he's so fast, his hands are so quick, he kind of relies on that so much. And what happens is, he can start an attack from so far out, mm-hmm. that he can close the distance so quick with his hands and feet, and he can blind you with his speed. And most guys can't handle that. But when he fought really good fighters, like Canelo, whatever about the doping issue, whether he was on it then or not, we don't know. And say, Danny Garcia, you know, really good top level fighters, they will time you. They'll eventually, you might sting them the first round, the second round, you might have success with that. Blistering, raiding attacks when you're quick in and out, but eventually they'll start to adjust to your speed,
okay.
And then they'll time you. And when you start to attack them too far out, they'll just time you coming on, and they'll just literally what both guys did, they just close their eyes and let a punch go,
okay.
And it landed. And
so that sounds like he's almost found a level and hasn't managed to evolve as a fighter to bridge the gap.
Look, he's won multiple world titles, Khan, at different weights.
He's almost dismissed. You know the way he's talked about it?
His knockouts have been so devastating. You know, his losses. You know, when you look at the Prescott knockout and then the Canelo one, you know, it's those are ones, the career ending, you know. But he's come back, and I think the 2-year layoff was good for him, because it probably gave him time to recover and regain and find himself and really ask him the questions, does he want to box again? Because I think financially he doesn't have to box. You know, I think he's... He doesn't. There's no need in that aspect. But
I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here and all that stuff.
Yeah. But
post on by.
I think he's done very well out of boxing financially, and okay. I think now it's about, does he want it? And like, there's obviously there's been posturing about him and Kell Brook. There's also been talk about him and Adrian Broner fighting, who fought at the weekend as well and had a draw against Jesse Vargas. So there's talk about that fight, but everybody wants to see the Kell Brook fight. I think. His move to Matchroom Sports, that's an indication that he'll want the fight and that it should happen. But I think if it drags out too long, people will lose interest, and it should happen the next fight or two, at least. Okay. You know, towards the end of the summer.
They bought into him a few times before, and there's almost an element of...
It should happen towards the end of the summer. You know, if Joshua is going to have a big outdoor fight in the summer, then put it towards September where Cannbrook happens.
So is there almost an element to it, Can, that there's a fella here who had such raw talent, and I don't know, is it he didn't get the right coaching, or maybe he just couldn't acquire the skills you're talking about? Is there a sense here of unfulfilled potential about Cam when you look at the 17-year-old?
It's hard to say that. The fact that he's won so many world titles and that he's an Olympic silver medalist at 17, you know. He's not, like, he's trained with Freddie Roach. He's trained with Virgil Hunter. So those are two of the biggest names in boxing. Now he's trained by Dan Goosen, who's another big name. He's trained the likes of Shane Mosley and Diego Corrales. So
he's not worked, like, he hasn't been exposed.
No, he's worked with big coaches. He's never adapted his style. He's always he's always fought in a kind of amateur, fast feet, fast hands, moving around and raiding and flashing people with speed and knocking them down and eventually knocking them out. But he's never fought in a real pro style, but a T style, and it's worked for him to a good extent.
To a very good extent. Like, we're talking about small. I'm being hypercritical here.
No. And him and Kell Brook it's a huge fight. And it's a hard fight to call because you can see ways where both guys can win. Maybe Amir Khan will go out and flash his speed and just be all over him and just be too much, and Kell Brook will never find that punch. Or whether Kell Brook will take his time and use what I said earlier, try and time him and try and watch him come in and let him take that fast attack. And
We should mention Katie Taylor. Katie Taylor is fighting this weekend in Brooklyn on Saturday. She's facing the IBF champion, Victoria Noella Bustos. So it's a unification fight. Very quiet build-up, this side of the pond. You wouldn't know this is on.
No, you wouldn't know. And it's, I'm not sure what the strategy is and why.
I presume they're beating the drum over there in a big way. And I even have to check, it is actually on Sky Sports Action this Saturday,
she's
2 a.m. So you can record this and watch this fight.
I think she's doing the ring around 12 a.m. Irish time, in the ring.
That'll get a big audience of people
who
was
watching. Like, I'll be watching anyway. So Danny Jacobs is the main event, so guy I could have potentially fought. But it's a unification fight. An Irish fighter involved in a world championship unification fight, and there's zero.
But it's not like I've heard her doing phone interviews over here even to promote it. I don't know what the strategy is. Maybe they just assume Irish people are into it anyway, and the British market, they'll be watching on Sky Sports anyway, so it's about making her name in the States. Like, the last time I kind of really remember her fighting well, was the York Hall fight in December, and that was a big TV event. And I don't know, it wasn't overly impressive from memory.
No, it was a tough fight.
Yeah.
And the end of a year where she had a lot of fights. Mm. And so she's had a bit of a break, not a really long break for a professional fighter. Like, it's the end of, technically 5 months, you know, because it was late December, and now it's the end of April. So hopefully she's kind of adapted, had a bit more time in the gym and adapted a bit more and tried to develop more professional style and a defense. Because as she steps up, the opponents will step up and the level of opposition will step up and they will get better, her opponents. And
have you seen much Bustos?
I haven't seen anything, zero about it. So there's not a lot out there to see. I don't think there's much on YouTube, but you know, you'd always fancy favour Katie Taylor because she's such a phenomenal athlete and a phenomenal boxer, and I'll be supporting her. Even if there's not much coverage of it here, she will be on Sky Sports and we can all tune in and watch it on Saturday night.
That's this Saturday. Sky Sports Action. Don't even ask me what number channel that's on anymore. They've made the whole thing impossible to remember. But it's on Sky Sports Action this Saturday. And then finally, we've mentioned Canelo a few times. Mm. So he's been suspended for 6 months. There was a Nevada Athletic Commission hearing in Las Vegas the other week. There were traces of clenbuterol in his system, which is used by athletes as a fat burner. It's been used in bodybuilding, cycling, lots of other sports. His story, obviously, is that it was in some contaminated meat, which provokes raised eyebrows from everyone and giggles. And 6 months is the ban. I mean, you're talking about Katie Taylor's taking 5 months off.
I know, yeah.
6 months is like, geez, I mean, you'd be mad not to dope with that kind of a sanction.
It's, I think that, like, you think that the Nevada Commission, they're just banning him to save face, you know, in a way. It doesn't really affect him. It's, of course, he loses the May 5th fight with Golovkin.
Yeah.
But he's going to turn around in September and get, even if not, an even bigger payday because of all this controversy. They'll build a story around it and hype the fight even more. And you think, I know you had Paulie Malignaggi on the show last week, and he came out pretty strongly, and I'd agree. Like, and I've said it before, that when you dope in a sport like boxing, where people's lives are at risk, it's a criminal offence, and it should be treated like, I think, at least a 2-year ban, yeah, if not a lifetime ban.
So this suggests boxing is not really taking this seriously, and it's because he's such a big name.
He's a big, and I totally agree with that. Mm. This. Like he doesn't suffer at all from this. It's a slap on the wrist at that, and a soft slap on the wrist, you know. He says it's contaminated meat. A lot of Mexican fighters seem to favor this, and they do it does go into the beef in Mexico, you know. It's known that they pump the cows up to,
yeah.
But it's for someone like, everybody knows that, like, everyone knows what goes in at this level of boxing, what goes into your body is your responsibility. And someone like him, who's multi-millionaire, surely could import his own meat, or he's got a team of 25 people around, yeah, him who could advise him what to eat and what not to eat. So it's to me, it stinks, and it's a cop out, and like, you wonder what Golovkin thinks about it at this stage, you know. And
well, the benefits of any doping far last beyond the period you've been taking the substances for. I mean, if you've cut weight and put on muscle, those benefits hang on, you know.
And like, just clearly in a boxing sense, yeah, Golovkin's going to fight May 5th. He's going to fight Vanus Monterosian, which Golovkin will win, but it'll still be a tax him. You know, it'll still tax him. He'll still be older. By the time they fight in September, he'll be another yeah, year older. He'll be another fight older.
Canelo's on the beach.
Canelo's chilling. You know what I mean? Eating
all the meat he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does. In your, and a last point on all of this, in your general experience over, what, 10, 12, 15 years, did you feel boxing was taking the issue of doping seriously?
No. I can probably count on the two hands the amount of times in my 11 years of pressure. The only fight I was properly tested for was the Quillen fight, and that's because we paid for it ourselves out of our purses.
Right.
To have proper testing done, random testing.
And is it because there's different governing bodies that no
governing
one's
bodies, and there's no one to pay for it, really, you know?
Okay.
Like, I was never randomly tested as a professional boxer. Never.
Never.
Never randomly tested.
Oh my God. So
you can do what you want.
You can do what you want.
And it's like at that level where, okay, you get at championship level, you get tested after fights. You should do. And most, and I did, after a high level profile fights, I got tested.
But like, you knew when the fight was on.
The fights, yeah. Yeah,
so,
of course,
I mean,
you know exactly.
You dope to the gills, yeah, and then when you know you're getting up to the fight, you stop easy, and you pass.
Yeah. And but not only that, like the times when I was fighting guys who I was fighting, like Journeyman, I was never tested, and they were never tested. And that's the most dangerous, because one fight has such an advantage already that if they're doping or on any substance, the damage they could do could be, you know.
Yeah.
Fatal.
Yes.
And no, boxing has a huge issue with doping, and not that I suspect a lot of fighters are doping. That they might well be. Mm. I personally never came across any of it until when I fought Chavez. That was the worst that I'd experienced it. There was no after fight doping, and they more or less, without doing it in front of me, let me know that they were going to cheat. You know, that this is what they were doing, and. That was just to demoralise me and let me think that I didn't have a chance of winning.
How did they let you know again? I know you've talked about this and they're just iffy about.
Yeah, there was no testing after, and they basically, when my assistant coach went in to watch them before the fight to take a test, what was the point of taking like 2 hours before the fight taking a test? What was the point of that? You know what I mean? Sure, there was a 2-hour window when anything could have been taken. Yeah. They didn't go into the toilet, you know. They just laughed. They just like basically dismissed them, you know, dismissed him and the tester, who was from the commission. I don't know what his response was, you know.
Right.
But I certainly took my test before the fight, and then after the fight there was no test.
Oh, so he didn't even take his test.
That's what I was led to believe, that somebody else came out of the other room where the cubicles were with the jar. And Chavez was standing there, but didn't come out of the cubicle.
Okay.
Anyway, it's no point in banging on about it, but boxing has a huge issue with doping, and they need to tackle it because it's losing credibility.
There's a tester standing there, not sure what to do.
Yeah, and intimidated by a room full of people who are, you know.
He probably doesn't feel he can call off a world title fight on that.
Anyway, it's a long story.
Yeah, no, I know you don't want to get into it overly again. So you're, in so much as you can see, the big issue is there's different governing bodies. They all have different ways of doing things. There was no consistency.
It's not even governing bodies. It's different states. Like when you're in America, every state has its own commission and they all have their own rules and it's, you know, it's...
And WADA aren't getting involved or doing much.
They're not. I think box, like it's... Now, I think after Canelo, I've received some emails from the WBC who I used to be a WBC fighter, signed clean fighter.
Yes.
That means you have to enroll in, once you fight for the title in the top 10, you have to enroll in this clean program. Mm. And they've been sending like weekly like an email and it's just basic nutritional advice, what to put in your body, what to eat, what not to eat, how much water to drink. And there's nothing about supplements, you know, so like...
Miles behind.
Unless they tackle the issue head on, like when the biggest star in boxing fails a test and he gets a 6 month ban, they're not facing up to the issue, you know?
No. Andy Lee, thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.